Welcome to the Are Your Hands Full podcast, a step-by-step parenting podcast for your Jewish family. My name is Dr. S. Yaroslavitz, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Please check out the most recent Are Your Hands Full download at www.handsfullchinuch.com. That's handsfullchinuch.com. Welcome to Lecture 6. Just as a quick, very quick recap, Lecture 1 was our introduction. Lecture 2 was titled The Right Way Down a One-Way Street. Lecture 3 was titled Our Special Children Living in Our World. The title of Lecture 4 was INB and SWC. The title of Lecture 5 was Our Special Teens. And now we are up to Lecture 6, titled, Our Preemies. Our caller asked the following excellent question. She asked, my child is functioning typically, or almost typically, but he was a preemie. He is extremely sensitive and has a really hard time calming down. I'm wondering if there is a separate set of instructions for raising preemies. Is there something else I need to know? So before we continue, we first have to learn about and define the premature baby. Obviously, no two premature births are the same, and no two premature babies are the same. So once again, it will be difficult to answer this question because there is no one answer. But to the best of my knowledge, I think it's safe to break down preemies into two categories. Category number one, a child who was born early because of its mother's known or unknown physical condition. Category number one can be subdivided into two subcategories. Subcategory number one is a child who was born early because of its mother's known or unknown physical condition, who survives prematurity and emerges unaffected developmentally. That's subcategory number one. And subcategory number two would be a child who was born early because of its mother's known or unknown physical condition, who was left with residual developmental delays or is physically compromised. Now let's talk about category number two. Remember, those two subcategories were part of category number one. Now let's talk about category number two. Category number two is a child who was born early because of some existing syndrome, which may or may not have been diagnosed during a pregnancy. Most likely, this child will exhibit physical or developmental manifestations. So just to be fair to our caller, I'd like to answer this question exactly as it was asked and focus this discussion on a child who was born early because of a mother's known or unknown physical condition or history who emerges from this process with normal function. So you might be thinking, what's the question here? If a child is functioning normally, he's functioning normally. Why is there a question about such a child benefiting from a behavior management approach just the way any child who is developing typically needs chinuch, right? What's the question here? So I had a fascinating experience that I want to share with you. As I was contemplating how to best put the answer to this question into words, Hashem sent me a scenario just yesterday morning which drove the message home in such a big way that I don't think there's a better way to illustrate it. I was doing my usual stuff yesterday morning, about 9 o'clock in the morning, getting ready for work, davening, packing up my stuff for the day. All of a sudden, my cleaning lady comes rushing into the house, tells me that there's a newborn deer under my car in the driveway, right next to the back left tire. Now, we live in Muncie, so deer is a very normal thing around here. It's not a big deal. I live on a circle with houses, and there's woods right near us, so we literally have mishpachas of deer that I always greet on my way into and out of the house every morning and late in the evening. It's very common. They all seem to know us, and we happily share our space with them because, after all, they were there first. During this time of year, though, it's quite common to see newborn deer walking around. They are usually the size, I would say, of a cat. Tiny. Adorable. Anyway, I run downstairs into my driveway, and sure enough, there's this tiny deer under my car, but so tiny that I'm almost positive it must have been a preemie. It was for sure smaller than a cat. No bigger than, I would say, let's say a squirrel. Now, you know what a regular deer looks like. This was teeny. How it got under my car, I had no idea. There was no sign of the mother and no sign that a birth took place. And I know what that looks like because, don't worry, I'm experienced with that too. I once had a deer give birth on my back lawn, so I know the whole scoop. This little tiny thing was alert. It looked at me with those doe-like eyes. Its ears perked up every time there was a noise. I could literally see all its bones and how all its organs were moving up and down when it breathed. It looked so, so lost. It looked so, so vulnerable. It looked so, so confused. I just melted. I was frantic. I said to my cleaning lady, we need to get this deer out from under my car because it needs to find its mother. My first reaction was to call Chaverim, Mika Amcha Yisrael, Baruch Hashem for Chaverim. Interestingly enough, when I called them, I was told, and this was 10 after 9 in the morning, that I was the second deer call for the day. Just for your information. Welcome to Muncie. Anyway, within minutes, two Heimisha guys show up, two separate cars. They took a look, and they realized there's no way they could reach under my car to get this little tiny thing out without hurting it. And I kept saying to them, you're not going to kill it. Promise me you're not going to kill it. I'll Uber myself to work. I'm not moving my car unless we get it out, healthy and well. You are not going to kill it. They looked at me like I had 10 heads. But the truth is, they didn't want to kill it either. So one of them gets into my car, and the other one stayed outside my car and guided him slowly, slowly, slowly. I couldn't breathe. They pulled my car out of my driveway over this tiny little deer without hurting it. I was in a panic. It didn't move, but it was watching its surroundings and it seemed extremely alert. Poor little thing. Anyway, the Chaverim guys wanted to leave it on my driveway and hope that the mother would come back for it. But first of all, it was very sunny on my driveway. And second of all, I was afraid some delivery guy was just going to drive right up my driveway and kill it. So they moved it off my driveway, right to the garden, right to the grass, and they put it under a tree. And that's where it sat. It seemed to me that it couldn't walk, but we decided to leave it there, hoping it would either walk off and find its mother or its mother would come and find it. Okay, so I leave to work. And in the whole commotion, I left my lunch at home. Okay, I get to work, and at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I had my lunch break. So I drove home to get my lunch. It's only a 6 or 7 minute drive, no big deal. And I was also in the back of my mind hoping to check up on my preemie deer. When I arrived, the deer was still sitting in exactly the same spot. Poor thing. It must have been thirsty. It must have been hungry. I had no idea what to do. Then Hashem sent Eric, my gardener. I almost never see Eric. Eric always sends his workers. They always make a racket. Eric was there because this time of year they open up the sprinklers. So he didn't even notice this tiny little deer. But I pointed it out to him. He took a look and then he turned to me and he said, Mrs. Sarah, for this baby, it's either sink or swim. Either he gets up and walks right now, either he gets up and joins the deer community, or he's going to sit here and die. But look at him, I said, Eric, he can't walk. Maybe I should call an animal shelter? I seriously don't want this deer to die, and I certainly don't want it to die on my lawn. And then, before I had a chance to blink, Eric said to me, of course he can walk. He picked up this tiny little thing, pulled out all four legs from under it, set him up on the grass with his tiny spindly legs, gave him a pat on the behind, and the next thing I knew, this little tiny thing, the size of a squirrel, on four stick-like wobbly legs, started walking, no running, and disappeared off the garden, crossed the street, and ran into the woods. Eric definitely saved this deer's life. I was like open mouthed. I was shocked. Eric, I said, you want to come work for me in my behavior management program for kids? He laughed and he said, no, missus, I'll stick to gardening. I like flowers and trees. But you know what? Mikol milamdai hiskalti. You can learn from everybody. You see how you could learn from everybody? Even your gardener? Here I am with all these years of behavioral experience, and my gardener taught me, boy, did he teach me a thing or two about behavior and survival. I was all busy feeling with my heart, feeling sorry for this poor little thing, and along came my gardener, who is more experienced in plants and animals than I am, far more, and he focused only on one thing and one thing only, the baby deer's survival. His words rung so true. If I don't push him to walk, he won't live. He won't join the deer community, and he'll be dead within a day. And so I picked up my lunch and headed back to the office, but my head was buzzing. I couldn't stop thinking about how Hashem sent this story just yesterday when I was about to address this question about human preemies who are developing normally. So now I'm going to draw a parallel. So a preemie is born, tiny, vulnerable. Survival is the main initial goal. There's fear, uncertainty. On a very small level, I experienced that fear yesterday when the two Chaverim guys pulled my car out from on top of this tiny little thing. The last thing on anyone's mind when one sees a preemie, or even a newborn for that matter, is behavior. The last thought we have at that time is what we're going to have to teach this child. First, we reason, the child has to survive. But here comes the egg, chicken, egg question. Do children survive and then learn? Or at some point, does the traffic pattern reverse itself? And do children have to learn in order to survive? What do you think? What was my gardener saying? Should we hope that the deer survives? And then let's worry about whether or not the deer will walk? Or does the deer need to learn to walk in order to survive? So now let's get back to our caller's question. She said, my child is functioning typically, or almost typically, but he was a preemie. He is extremely sensitive and has a really hard time calming down. I'm wondering if there is a separate set of instructions for raising preemies. Is there something else I need to know? The answer is that your child needs to learn to calm down on his own in order to survive the test of life. Your preemie was born into this world with the word survival as the theme of his incubator. No one thought about training your child at all. Think back to those weeks and months. And then proceed to think further into the 8-9 month stage, the first year stage, beginning of toddler stage. Ask yourself, when was the first time I looked at this child and had the conscious thought that this child must be trained to cope with mainstream societal life? Age 2? Age 3? Age 4? I'm assuming that by the mere fact that our caller asked this question, she understands that her child does have to learn to tolerate frustration at some point or another. The training process in a newborn baby who is developing typically does not begin until approximately 6 months of age. Mostly at that age, many parents begin to understand that they must train their child, whether it's in sleeping or feeding schedules or the like. So they figure it out naturally. Without realizing what they're doing, they begin to set limits. They train. They don't rush to pick up the child after every squawk. There isn't that urgency in checking on the child every second. There isn't that fear of weight, how much food they consume, how much they gained. Things usually start to settle. In the case of a preemie, this process could take longer. So sometimes a preemie child will arrive to a much older age, even a corrected age, without having experienced any frustration at all. Besides that, most parents feel compassion for what the child had to endure during his or her stay in the NICU, and often are unable to induce any further frustration or discomfort on the child because of this mantra. A mantra is an expression. Didn't he go through enough? Didn't she already go through enough? So what happens is the child goes through the first two, sometimes 3 years of life, without ever experiencing frustration that naturally would get created at home through this basic natural training process. So then when you do try to teach tolerance of frustration, the skill of self-calming or self-regulation is a brand new skill set that a child will have added difficulty learning because they are older than they should have been when this challenge is first introduced. Furthermore, a younger child's frustration and tantrums will be shorter and less intense than a child who is older. So if you started this training process later, it will appear as if the child can't manage to self-calm. So here's the answer to your question and a basic rule for you to remember. Any child who is developing typically can self-calm. All they need is the correct environment in which to do so. If they know that their parents are afraid for their welfare, are nervous, are frightened, are unsure of themselves, they themselves become insecure, and that causes them to tantrum longer and more intensely. On a subconscious level, they are asking themselves, if the people who are taking care of me are so worried and nervous and are unsure how to handle me, then what's going to be with me? If, on the other hand, a child is in the middle of a tantrum and his parents appear calm and collected, even if he's frustrated and angry, he knows deep down in his subconscious that the people who are taking care of him know exactly what they are doing and are capable. That knowledge over time will help a child relax and become a calmer and happier child. Let me ask you, have you ever been nervous, angry, or upset about something? I'm sure you have. We all have. Do you remember your reaction when another person tells you to calm down or tries to calm you down? What happens to you? You get angrier, you get more upset. Believe it or not, you end up being upset for a longer time than if somebody would just wait for you yourself to come forward and regulate yourself. You could handle whatever the matzav that you happen to be in with much more clarity and much more efficiently if you did the problem solving and calming down yourself. The same holds true for children. They do so much better when they are placed in an environment where they can experience frustration and learn to deal with it on their own. In order for this to happen, there is no talking during tantrums. This is a hard rule. Most parents instinctively want to help their children calm down because they either can't tolerate seeing their child frustrated, or they can't handle the noise or the misbehavior that comes along with it. And unfortunately, there are some parents whose own frustration tolerance is so low that they quickly solve their children's problems for them in order to restore an illusion of peace. And when you give into that kind of tantrum, sadly, you reduce the child's ability to self-calm even more. So ask yourself this extremely important question. If you have a child who was born prematurely and through the nisim of current technology and with the help of our huge Eibishta, that child survived and is developing just about typically, how much of this child's preeminess do you want to follow him or her around into adulthood? How much do you want this child to tell a potential employer during a job interview? You know, by the way, I was a 26-weeker, or I was a 32-weeker. Or how much do you want to be saying to a shatran? My son is a 23-weeker, but he's functioning perfectly normally. Not that there's anything in the world to be embarrassed of, Chalila, quite the contrary. But at the same time, you want to give your child the best stab at life in general. And the best stab at life is to be part of our Yiddish mainstream society. And that these preemie children who are functioning normally should view themselves as just that, normally developing. Now, for those of you who are raising children who were preemies or who are preemies, who are left with residual deficit or developmental delays, know that each child will likely have some percentage of their IQ, their EQ, or other generalized function that is trainable. Sometimes you might have to search hard for the places where your child is trainable. Sometimes it will be hidden, but it's usually there. For those of you who know the story of Helen Keller, think of Annie Sullivan. Think of the famous chapter in her book where Helen Keller was allowed to walk around the table and stick her hands into everyone's plate and eat whatever she wanted, remember? Because after all, Helen doesn't understand. Remember what happened? Remember what Annie did? Annie did not allow the child to eat from her own plate, from Annie's plate. A huge tantrum erupted. The dining room in that upscale southern plantation turned into a disaster zone. But at the end of the commotion, during which Annie sent both parents out of the room, she managed to teach Helen to fold her napkin. And Annie hung on to that. She kept repeating, she folded her napkin, she folded her napkin. If I could teach her to fold her napkin, what else can I teach her? So keep searching for that trainable part in your child. It's there, one little piece at a time. Hatzlacha, and have a wonderful week. Thanks for listening to my podcast. My name is Dr. S. Yaroslavitz, and I am the director of Hands Full, which is committed to the provision of community education in the area of behavior management and cognitive development of children. I look forward to hearing from you with any questions that you have. And remember, no matter how impossible things may seem, the Earth will continue rotating on its axis.